Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 3, Text 1. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shuka uvacha eva metan nijiditam eva metan nijiditam ishtavan yad bhavan mama ninam yan niyamananam Shukadeva Goswami said, Maharaj Cricket, as you have inquired from me as to the duty of the intelligent man who is on the threshold of death, so I have answered you. Purport. In human society all over the world, there are millions and billions of men and women, and almost all of them are less intelligent because they have very little knowledge of the spirit soul. Almost all of them have a wrong conception of life, for they identify themselves with the gross and subtle material bodies, which they are not. In fact, they may be situated in different high and low positions in the estimation of human society. But one should know definitely that unless one inquires about his own self beyond the body and the mind, all his activities in human life are total failures. Therefore, out of thousands and thousands of men, one may inquire about his spirit self and thus consult the revealed scriptures like the Vedanta Sutras, Bhagavad Gita, and Srimad Bhagavatam. But in spite of reading and hearing such scriptures, unless one is in touch with a realized spiritual master, he cannot actually realize the real nature of the self. And out of thousands and hundreds of thousands of men, someone may know what Lord Krishna is in fact. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 20, 122 to 123, it is said that Lord Krishna, out of his causeless mercy, prepared the Vedic literatures in the incarnation of Vyasadeva for reading by the intelligent class of men in the human society, which is almost totally forgetful of the genuine realization of Krishna. Even such an intelligent class of men may be forgetful in their relationship with the Lord. The whole bhakti yoga process is therefore a revival of the lost relation. If revival is possible in the human form of life, which is obtained only out of the evolutionary cycle of 8,400,000 species of life, the intelligent class of human beings must take a serious note of this opportunity. Not all human beings are intelligent, so the importance of human life is not always understood. Therefore, manishinam, meaning thoughtful, is particularly used here. A manishinam person like Maharaj Cricket must therefore take to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna and fully engage himself in devotional service, hearing, chanting of the holy name and pastime to the Lord, which all harikathamrita. This action is especially recommended when one is preparing for his death. Amiyanatinanandasya Tinanjana Savataya Dakshuramurasamyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vansha Kopa Kuru Vrishya Kutasindu Bhai Vrishya Kapitanam Bhavanidyo Vaishnavedyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudeva Bhaktavinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama. Lecturing continuously since the first canto, 5, 10, verses every day. So before we start again, this is like almost like a new group, I'll just go a little bit and review. And it's actually a good place to review because the word here is Niyamananam, on the threshold of death. The verse is Prishtavan, as you have inquired from me, Niyamananana, of the human beings on the threshold of death, the duty of the intelligent man is on the threshold of death, as you've inquired from me. So this word, Niyamananam, is also used at the end of the first canto. Because at the end of the first canto, it's the scene where Marge Cricket goes to the bank of the Ganges, of Jamuna, and all the sages of the universe, assemble there because they understand that Marge Cricket is a very, very great personality. And they're talking amongst themselves, and they're not really sure how to advise him. And then Sukadeva Goswami comes, and just from his physiognomy, and just his looks, and his they could understand this is a very great personality. And he takes the position to begin to instruct Maharaj Cricket. We're reading about that description, that he was very, very, he was ready to answer his questions. He knew that he had that understanding and knowledge, and he was very, very patient and open-hearted and ready to answer his questions. And then Marge Cricket asked the question, and specifically asked this question, that there's so many duties that people have. But you pick the, it was actually the word was shudham, the pure duty, the complete duty, the perfect duty, for all people, you pick the completely, the perfect duty. And of course, this is actually discussed that when he says the pure duty, even though it seems generic, it's understood that he's actually asking about devotional service. Because devotional service is actually the only pure duty. Duty means dharma. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has defined dharma as our eternal nature. That's what dharma is. Dharma means duty or what you should do. So what you should do depends on what you are. And we're servants of Krishna. So obviously, and that's the pure position. It's the original position. The position before we've added anything else. So that's the shudham. That's the pure position to serve Krishna. So he asked him, you know, of all people, what is the perfect duty to do? And then it said this word here, niyamananam, especially those who are about to die. Especially those. So here in this verse, it says, Marge Cricket, as you inquired from me as to the duty of the intelligent man is on the threat, so I have answered you. So that means that the previous two chapters especially dealt with those duties of the duty of a man who's about to die. So the previous two chapters, he's basically saying that now I've answered you. I've answered you in terms of the intelligent man who's on the threshold of death. And the intelligent man who's on the threshold of death specifically makes this inquiry. And Prabhupada says that's the difference between a human being and an animal. That a human being has intelligence. He inquires. What is my duty? What is the right thing? That's why Prabhupada says the difference between a human being and an animal is the human being can ask the question, why I'm suffering. So suffering means you're doing something wrong. So an intelligent person asks, what should I do right so I don't suffer? In other words, when you do something wrong, it indicates, when you're suffering, it indicates there's something wrong. So an intelligent man is questioning his suffering position and asking, what should I do? What is my dharma? What is my duty? So that's the human form of life. It's meant for this intelligent inquiry. So he says, you've asked me this intelligent inquiry, so I've answered you. So I just go back how he actually answered this question. And it's very interesting. I hope maybe, well, let's see, if it takes the whole class, what can I do? I try to, but I'll just give you a brief summary, and those who studied remember. So when Sukadeva Goswami hears the question, he becomes very, very enlivened. And Prabhupada discusses it. Why does he become enlivened when he hears the question? Because he realizes that Maharaj Pickett is a devotee. And the meaning of a question depends on who asks the question. So if the devotee is asking, what's my duty? He's expecting you to answer within the realm of devotional service. So he understands that it's about Krishna. And therefore, he says, Vriyan Asha Te Krishna, that your question is glorious. Krita Loka Hitam Nipa. That Krita Loka, like Lokanam Hitta Karano, to do the name. Hitta means to do good. Your question does good to everyone. Because you see, the question is the answer. Because the question is also Krishna Kata, and that's the answer. That's the ultimate duty of a man who's about to die. The ultimate duty of a man who's about to die is to revive his eternal nature, to identify with the self. And we see that actually throughout the Bhagavatam. We saw it in the case of Maharaj Pickett when he went to the north, when he realized that, you know, he should leave the world. He amalgamated everything that had no connection with the self. No connection with the devotional service. That's an art that has no value. So Krishna Katha is the process that awakens the self, awakens your eternal nature. And therefore, previously, Sita Goswami said, Dharma Sunishita Punsa. That those duties that don't evoke an attraction for Krishna, then they have no value, because it's that attraction for Krishna, that glorification of Krishna, that ultimately awakens the eternal nature, which is physically, that we're devotees, which is ultimately religion, which is ultimately dharma, which is ultimately our duty. So Vriyanesha Te Krishna Krishna Lokam Itanava, Atmavit Samatapumsa, Shrota Vyadini Yapara. It's the supreme subject matter for hearing, and it's approved by all transcendentalists, by Atmavit, those who know the self, those who know reality. It's approved, your question, because it's about the self. It has to deal with the self. So he basically, right from the beginning, he answered the question, what is the duty of a man who's about to die? It's to talk and glorify Krishna. And then what he does is to highlight this, that this is actually the duty to glorify Krishna. To highlight it, he shows what it's like if you don't glorify Krishna, then what your life is about. This is a way of pointing out what your duty is, to show what it's not, what it's like when you don't do your duty. So he says, Shrota Vyadini Rajendra, what is it? Nirnam Shanti Sahasrasa, Apasyat Atmatatvam Viheshu Vihamedium. That those who are materialists, Viheshu Vihamedium, they're competing in the material world. They're not serving Krishna, but they're trying to be the enjoyer. And therefore, Pashyam Atmatata, therefore they're blind to the self. Then Shrota Vyadini, Rajendra, Ninam Shanti, they have so many other things to talk about. Shanti Sahasrita, there are Sahasra, there's thousands of things they talk about. But they're blind to the real thing. And they're so foolish. And then he describes, they waste their day in economic development and their night in sex life. And it's maintaining family members and economic development during the day, the night is sex life, and they think that this material situation they're in is eternal. This is the real situation. And they don't see that it's temporary. They're so foolish. Even though everyone has died, Prabhupada said your father said, they don't see it. This is their blindness. They think that this family situation is the eternal nature. It's the reality. It's the
impermanent thing. They don't see that the real thing is the self. And therefore he concludes, and therefore one should chant, hear, worship, and remember Krishna. That's the conclusion, because the goal of everything is Anti Narayana Smriti. At the end of life, you should be Krishna conscious, so that can carry you to your next destination. And therefore, this is the conclusion. You should chant, hear, and worship Krishna. Anyway, I'll just go for today. So he explains this. So he's come right at the very beginning. It's very interesting because the Bhagavatam, you know, goes on to canto after canto, but right from the beginning, the answer is there. But he has to fortify or solidify that conception that you should chant, hear, and worship Krishna. Well, one thing that he does, which is very interesting, because people, it's not just that you can hear an instruction, but you have to understand the instruction. And therefore, we have various misconceptions in our consciousness. And we project those misconceptions on what we hear. Therefore, we have to have some kind of dialogue with a teacher. That's why the acharya is necessary, acharya purusha veda. Because though you may read the book, and the book may be the truth, do you understand the truth? Well, for example, the classic example is with Indians. You can say, yes, worship Krishna, and bhakti is the goal of life. They've heard it, you've told them, and what do they say? Yes, 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 yes. I understand. And then they'll tell you what they've understood from what you said. Yes, you know, Durga and Ganesh and my grandfather, my grandfamily, and you go to. So, you know, you have to say, no, it's not like this. So there has to be some kind of dialogue. And so Sukadeva Goswami is such an empowered creature that he's understanding not only Maharaj Prickett's mind, but everybody's mind. So the first thing he does is he said the goal is to glorify Krishna. So the first thing that he does is that he explains that Krishna is the absolute truth. In other words, it's not that there's something higher than Krishna. It's not a material thing. You should worship Krishna. People say, yes, Krishna. You know, who's a manifestation of Brahman. So he explains that the topmost transcendentalists, those who are above the regulative principles, in other words, they have nothing to do with this world, they worship Krishna. Meaning that Krishna, and worshiping Krishna, is a transcendental thing. It's not a material thing. And then he explains, I myself was such a person. He verifies it by a personal example. And I was self-realized and I worship Krishna. So then the next thing he's thinking when he's preaching to Maharaj Prickett is that I told him the goal of life. I told him that this goal of life is transcendental because there's so much Mayavadi conception. He could start worshiping Krishna thinking that there's something beyond Krishna. He can chant and hear about Krishna thinking that there's something beyond Krishna. So let me so I've told him that, but now there's another thing. He may become discouraged because he only has 7 days left to live. He's understanding his psychology now. Because you told him the absolute truth, he understands it, then he says, oh, well, what can I do? I only have 7 days left to live. So then he says, better a moment of full consciousness than a prolonged life wasted in sense gratification. And the word given was muhurtam. Better 48 minutes of full Krishna consciousness. I've had a little experience during Kartik. You know, when you really get serious and do a nice karti prasad, that month is better than 20 years of devotional service we put around. it's really, you can accelerate your devotional service by ekadasi, by different things. So really, it's just, I got so much out of this karti this year, just by, you know, having no distractions and nothing else to think about, just like you and Talcott. And so he says, then he gives the same word, muhurtam. Well, there was someone who only had a muhurtam, a moment, and he gave the example of King Katvanga. So he always states the principle and then gives an example, and he achieved perfection. So, you know, you can also achieve perfection if you become serious right now. And then he says, that very Srimad Bhagavatam, which I just recommended, because you are very sincere devotee, I will explain that Bhagavatam to you. Well, actually, that comes before King Katvanga. He says, that very Bhagavatam I will explain to you because you are a sincere devotee. You'll give the proper respect and attention to it. Therefore, I'm going to explain that to you. And one who does this process of, with faith and attention, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, then Mukunde Mati Sati, then one develops unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord, which is actually the perfection. Mukunda Mati, Mati means faith, Sati, unflinching faith by this process. In other words, you can achieve perfection. And then he also recommends constant chanting of the holy name. These things go together. This is the process. You can't realize the Lord's pastimes without chanting the holy name. And at the same time, to chant the holy name properly, you have to hear the Lord's pastimes. And you have to hear about Krishna. Because to chant the holy name properly, your intelligence has to be fixed. If your intelligence is not fixed, then it's nama-parad. You can chant with a Mayavadi conception. So this is also, I'm not going to go into all the points we discussed, but we've been studying it very deeply. And it really discusses this process of Krishna consciousness in different ways. And how the intelligence has to be fixed to meditate on Krishna and to practice Krishna consciousness. The buddhi has to be fixed. So, he also recommends chanting. Chanting and hearing about Krishna. This is the process. And then a very interesting thing happens there. He explains to Maharaj Prickett, because again, the conclusion has now already been given. So Prabhupada, he says you can best prepare, you can perform all those rituals which are needed for the best purpose of your next life. So Prabhupada is nothing formal. Basically, the man is about to die, which is every man, but specifically someone who gets noticed should become very, very serious. And he should chant in here, but there are some favorable conditions. So this is a very interesting thing that happens. There are favorable conditions to hear. So favorable conditions mean that even though the goal is to chant and hear about Krishna, there are certain things we can do to facilitate that. And then he begins to describe that. And of course, the first thing is you have to leave the home. You have to leave the home. Now, I'm very excited about studying this, and I want to go into every verse, but this was a very interesting point, that you have to leave the home, because one lives in an environment and creates an environment according to his modes of nature. This is just natural. So your environment, generally the environment you're in, especially a household, especially you can see an Indian household after 25 years, the environment that you're in is constructed to nourish your modes, which means your material conceptions, which is the bodily concept of life, your material desires. So even if you want to take to this process of chanting and hearing, and you know, the man is about to die, then it's recommended that he has to leave that situation. Of course, you could make your household Krishna conscious. But it's recommended here to leave that situation. And then he describes, all the different things that one has to do. You have to be dhira. Prabhupada also discusses, you leave home, but you be dhira. It's not that you leave home, go to Vrindavan, and then build another big house. And then, with so many other different things, and get entangled in so many other things, and then get married again. But you should be dhira, you sit down, it should be a holy place, it should be clean. He describes all these things. It's very... And
And after sitting in the proper matter, this is asana, we must have an asana, a place of worship that's exclusive for the meditation and thoughts of Krishna. We have to learn this also in Islam. We have to have an asana. We have to have a place of worship which cannot be intruded on. That's real worship. But generally in all these spiritual paths, you'll see that people have asanas. They have a seat. They have a place where they sit. And it's kind of like a zone where Maya does not enter for some period of time. So after that, you purify your mind by sound vibration. He talks about chanting Om. And then by doing that, the consciousness becomes purified. When the consciousness is about a little bit purified, then you can meditate upon Krishna. He's just describing the whole process. And after meditating on Krishna, and he describes that to purify the heart, the best way to do it is actually to meditate on Krishna. And then he describes a system of how this can be done at the beginning. So what happens right now, it's very interesting, although it's Maharaj Prickett, he's so exalted, and he's telling what is the duty of a man who's about to die, when he gets right to the point and tells him. Then just by the way he tells him, he somehow or other gets to the preliminary steps of self-realization. Because, you know, the conclusion is that when he began to describe the preliminaries, that you need, by transcendental sound vibration, Om, because maybe yet you're not really identifying with the personal concept of God. Although it's God's name, it doesn't have that personal conception, and therefore people can chant it, even who are impersonalists. And your consciousness can become purified, and then you can meditate on Krishna. You can meditate on God. And this is the best way to get free from all the dirty things. And then he describes, this is the system of remembering. This is how you can do it. And he begins to explain to someone who yet is either impersonal or materialistic how you can begin to meditate on Krishna. When you're materialistic, you don't want to meditate on God. You want to meditate on yourself and sense gratification. You don't want to meditate on, there's a divinity, there's a greatness. You want to meditate on your own greatness. You want to see the world in that regard. So you don't want to meditate on God. You're materialist and impersonalist because you don't believe in his personal form. So he describes this, and that's why the first chapter is called the first step in God realization. He describes how it can be done for the neophyte. And the way the neophyte can do it is he can meditate on God's energy and meditate how that energy is connected to God by looking at the material world. And there's a whole description on this, how this purifies the consciousness. One, because God's energy is connected to God. So if you look at it in a spiritual way, it'll have some potency in that way. But also that when you're a neophyte, you can only understand God. In other words, the first step of God realization is to understand that you're God's servant. To understand that you're insignificant. That you have to get away from the concept that I'm the controller and I'm the enjoyer. So you have to see yourself in a very insignificant way. So the way to do that for a materialist is to meditate on God. In other words, he only has access to matter. So if you can look at things which you think are superior to you in terms of power, which is the material world, then that will help you to become God conscious. If you can look at it in relationship to God. So you see like the mountains as his bones, and this whole description is there of the universal form. And Prabhupada in the purport extensively describes how it actually spiritualizes one's consciousness. For the impersonalist, because he's seeing God as all-pervading, he begins to see the personal aspect of God. And because by nature we're God's servant, some devotion may develop in the impersonalist. Because it's basically an impersonal conception, because
In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, by a spark of my splendor, I'm pervading everything. So by, you see God everywhere. It's an impersonal conception, but at the same time, it ascribes some divinity to your meditation on God. That develops a devotional conception. And Prabhupada also makes the point, which is that because even though it's an imaginary, it's a meditation, it's imaginary meditation, it's a reality, because if you look at the mountain as the bones of God, you're actually seeing the reality of that mountain. The reality of the mountain is that it's God's energy. Maya means to see things separate from God. So even though you're imposing an imagination on it, it's actually giving you a higher perception of the world. Then the illusion you're used to into that is completely separate of God, and it's meant for my enjoyment. So to see it in relationship to God, even in an imaginary way, is a higher sense of consciousness. And then, as Prabhupada said, aborigines, when they see a great tiger, or they see some lightning, or they see something that's very great, it develops in them a sense of humility, a sense, the first step in God realization. So he described this. Today I can just... And then the second chapter, what happens is very interesting. He gives an example of this to start off. This is how Lord Brahma became spiritualized, by meditating on the Bharat Rupa. Then, again, he's looking at Sukadeva Goswami is looking at Maharaj Prickett. And he's understanding that I'm explaining this, you know, from the Vedas. And now, a thing that happens to people that can distract them from spiritual life, because they know the authority of the Vedas has karma kanda. And karma kanda distracts people to positions in the material world in the name of spirituality. You perform some sacrifice and you go to some higher planet or... So he knows that, you know, you enthuse someone for spirituality and they can become so distracted by different prescriptions in the Vedas. So he describes how you should not become bewildered by this. This is the same instruction that's there in the Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter. Don't become bewildered by this. You know, it doesn't really have any real meaning or value, and it won't give you happiness. So don't become bewildered by this. Rather, you should live a very, very simple and renounced life. You shouldn't become enamored by material enjoyment. And then he describes the life of a mendicant, how a mendicant can live, because that's basically what Maharaj Prickett is. You shouldn't become bewildered by the material world. It's actually, in the sense that it's temporary, it's illusory. So don't become bewildered and live very, very simple. Because if you start to get too involved in the material energy, it will bring you into the concept that you're the enjoyer and you're the controller, and it will give you material aspirations. So you should live a very, very simple life. And you should become detached. And then you should search out God. And because He's everywhere, He's also in the heart. So you should become fixed on the super soul. And this is the next step in God realization. So also what's happening is by describing these other processes of self-realization, even though they're not directly recommended for Maharaj Prickett. One, because they're processes of self-realization, they have elements in those processes that are relevant to our own spiritual progress. Even meditating on the universal form, even the Bhagavad Gita, it mentions that we have to train ourselves to see the world in relationship to God and His energy. And when you don't see that, that's the illusion. That's what Maya is. Maya is that by our desire for sense gratification, we tend to see God's energy as separate from Him so we can enjoy. And that's why in Bhagavad Gita it recommends sacrifice, because by being in the mood of service and sacrifice, then you begin to see reality. You begin to see God's energy as His. And that's what karma yoga is. Karma yoga means is you have the enjoying spirit and which is your nature, that you want things for yourself, and therefore you tend to see him separate from God. That's Maya. That's the illusion. So karma yoga means that by using them for God, then you tend to see him as his. So even a materialist, he starts giving the fruits of his activities to Krishna, it will start to awaken his God consciousness. Anyway, so he begins to describe the meditation on the Supersoul, which is the next step. It's a higher conception than worshiping the universal form. He begins to describe worshiping the Supersoul and how that leads to perfection. Because the question is, what is the duty of a man who's about to die? So he should become perfect. He should become God-realized. So he begins to describe this meditation on the Supersoul. And I was describing within it very, very many interesting things. So you begin to meditate, but your meditation, the level of your meditation depends on your purity. He begins to describe this. You have to start, it's so analogous to us, because what happens is he begins to describe how one becomes purified. It's this yoga mishra bhakti. And how when one is detached from the world and his intelligence is purified, there's so many details I can't remember them right now. But you're able to actually search out with your intelligence, even after you've controlled the senses, the different chakras in your body, and you're able to leave the body through the top of the head, the Brahmarandra, by this process. It's based probably on a mechanical process for spiritual perfection. So then it describes the ascent of the soul. This is a indirect process which Prabhupada describes in days of yore. This is what brahmacharis would learn. They could actually were qualified to do this. And Prabhupada in the purport shows very, very clearly how the same process happens by the process of chanting and reading, he said. That the bhakti lata bij in the same way pierces the universe and reposes the lotus feet of Krishna. But this process is described of worshiping the super soul. And basically it's a process of ascending through the universe. And as you're ascending, you have to become increasingly more detached. Two things are necessary for advancement in spiritual life or purification. One is that the senses have to be controlled, you have to become detached, and that the intelligence has to be fixed. The intelligence has to be purified. And purification of intelligence means detachment from sense gratification. So the intelligence has to be also fixed. So as you're ascending and advancing, you have to become free from misconceptions and free from attachments. And that's the process of elevating yourself in consciousness. So it describes how the yogi is actually able to do this mechanically. But it always takes that kind of vairagya, that will. You know, I will give up. So as he's exerting his will to become, to give up his attachments, he ascends through the universe, and the Milky Way leads to Satyaloka. So he goes through the Milky Way. This is all described. He goes to Satyaloka. And at the platform, he gets to Satyaloka. There's descriptions of that too. At Satyaloka, he is able to amalgamate the false ego with the Mahatattva slowly. In other words, the process of self-realization, this is the indirect process, and Maharaj Yudhisthira had elements of that, is giving up everything that has no relationship with the self. The self is a servant of Krishna. So everything that has no relationship to service to Krishna has to be given up. And for the yogi, a great transcendentalist, mechanically he can amalgamate the things that he's associated with the material energy. And Prabhupada describes, it was so interesting, that a portion of the Mahatattva, which is the basis of how the material world expands, is the false ego. A part of the false ego is the intelligence. A part of the intelligence is the mind. A part of the mind then is the ether. And then, you know, getting down to earth. So that the whole thing has to be reversed, and ultimately the ego is merged. And then And then at that point, according to the aspiration one has, he can go to his particular destiny. So if the person has been practicing that with bhakti, with the objection to actually go back to the spiritual world, he can go back to the spiritual world. So it's all described. And then what the conclusion was, is that Krishna is the Supersoul, and therefore we should chant, worship, hear, and remember Krishna. So ultimately, all these descriptions, behind this, the Virat Roop, the universal form, is Krishna. It's his energy. Beyond the Supersoul, it's Krishna. So the conclusion comes back to the same thing, that we should hear Hari Katha. We should chant, worship, remember, and glorify Krishna. And that was the last thing that Sukadeva Goswami said, was therefore every human being, it's essential to remember Krishna, who's the Supersoul. He's everywhere and anywhere. It also means devotional service is universally applicable. After describing the Supersoul, we should worship Krishna. It's him who's everywhere and everywhere. And those who drink through all reception, fully filled with the nectarian message of Lord Krishna, the beloved devotees. So when you start to hear about Krishna, it all comes down to the Bhagavatam. Then when you start to hear about Krishna, then the polluted aim of life, known as material enjoyment, you become purified. And then you go back to Godhead, to the lotus feet of Krishna. So the answer, Sukadeva Goswami's explained this, now this verse. As you've inquired from me as to the duty, now, as the intelligent man, as when I have answered you. So I have answered your question. The intelligent man is one who becomes detached from this world, is not searching for places in this world, and he's inquires about the self behind the body. Prabhupada's describing all these in the purport. This is intelligence. And it's very, very rare. As a person is consulting the scriptures and he comes in contact with a spiritual master, this is manishana. This is the intelligent person who knows what his duty is. This is what he does. And Vyas prepared the Vedic literatures for reading by the intelligent class of men. Prabhupada, this is our movement. Books are the basis. So the bhakti yoga process, it's a revival of this lost relationship. The Prabhupada says even intelligent men forget this. They forget that we're the soul and we're meant to serve in Krishna, and that dharma or religion means to uncover that eternal nature. And in this age, it's uncovered by the process of chanting and hearing about Krishna. So that's the process. So this is what an intelligent man is. And you've inquired to me, the intelligent man who's on the threshold of life. I responded to you, that intelligent man on the threshold of death, he chants, hears, and worships Krishna. He drinks this nectar of Harikatha. He's drinking it. That was the last verse. The last verse described the intelligent man. Divantiye bhagavata atmanasatam katam ritam shravana putesha sambritam. This is the intelligent man. There, yea, those, Bibhanti, who drink Shravana Putesho within the ear hole, Katamritam, the nectarian message, Bhagavata, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the intelligent man. It's described. I've described to you. You've asked the question. This is it. One who is drinking through the ear hole the nectarian messages of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's Atmana Satam, who is the most dear to the devotees. And he's intelligent because by this process, Punanti, it purifies Vidushita Asayam, the polluted aim of life, which is known as Vishaya, material enjoyment. And Vrijanti, he goes back Tachana, to the lotus feet of Krishna. So as you've inquired, what is the intelligent man? I've now answered you. It's one who's hearing and chanting about Krishna and drinking this katamritam, this nectarian message of Krishna katha, and it purifies his material desires. This is the intelligent man. So therefore, in this verse, Prishtavan, as you've inquired, mama unto me, nirnam, miyamananam, of the duty of the intelligent man on the time of death, now nigaditam, I have answered. And Prabhupada said, not all human beings are intelligent.
So the importance of human life is not always understood. Therefore, manishinam, meaning thoughtful, is particularly used. A manishinam person like Maharaj Prickett must therefore take the lotus feet of Lord Krishna and fully engage himself in devotional service, hearing, chanting, etc., of the holy name and pastimes of the Lord, which are all Hari Katamrita. The action is especially recommended when one is preparing for death. So that's what he already explained. What is the duty of a man? To hear the Srimad Bhagavatam and chant the holy name, Katamrita, to drink this nectar. This is the duty. And therefore, as you have asked, I have explained it to you. And now what will happen is he'll describe one more thing, which is demigod worship. And then he'll get to, that's why this chapter is pure devotional service. Because he'll describe those who are not intelligent and how they, according to their modes, have different desires to be fulfilled, and then they aspire for benefits in this material world. And then an interesting thing will happen. He'll describe that those who have desires, they worship different demigods, and those who don't desire anything, they should worship the personality of Godhead. In other words, if you've come to the self, which is a servant of Krishna, your desire is pure to give Krishna pleasure, you should just worship him. And then there's a famous verse. We'll discuss this tomorrow. Akama sarva karma va moksha kama udaradi. One who's udaradi, who has broad intelligence, even if he has desires, or he doesn't have desires, he'll worship Krishna because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The udaradi, his broad intelligence, he should worship Krishna. And that will be described. So text 2-7. Long, so many. Brahma Parchasakamastu Yajeta Brahmanapatim Indram Indriyakamastu Prajakama Prajapatim Devim Mayam Tu Shri Kamas Tejas Kamo Vibhavasum Vasu Kamo Vasum Udram Virya Kamo Tavirjavan. So it's a whole long list. One who desires to be absorbed in the impersonal Brahmajyoti effulgent should worship the master of the Vedas, Lord Brahma, or Brihaspati, learned priest. One who desires powerful sex should worship the heavenly king Indra. One who desires good progeny should worship the great progenitors called Prajapati. One who desires good fortune should worship Durga Devi, the superintendent of the material world. One desiring to be very powerful should worship fire. And one who aspires after money should worship the Vasus. Now you shouldn't be thinking now, how can I worship the Vasus? How can I? After coming this far, it shouldn't be that way. One should worship the Rudra incarnations of Lord Shiva if he wants to be a great hero. One who wants a large stock of grain should worship Aditi. One who desires to attain the heavenly planets should worship the sons of Aditi. One who desires a worldly kingdom should worship Vishvadev. And one who wants to be popular with the general mass of population should worship the Sadhya demigod. One who desires a long life span of life should worship the demigods known as Ashvini Kumaras. And a person desiring a strongly built body should worship the earth. One who desires stability in his post should worship the horizon and the earth combined. One who desires to be beautiful should worship the beautiful residents of the Gandharva planet. And one who desires a good wife should worship the Apsaras and the Orvasi society girls of the heavenly kingdom. One who desires domination over others should worship Lord Brahma, the head of the universe. One who desires tangible fame should worship the personality of Godhead. And one who desires a good bank balance should worship the demigods Varuna. If one desires to be a greatly learned man, he should worship Lord Shiva. And if one desires a good material, marital relation, he should worship the chaste god Uma, the wife of Lord Shiva. So, just to get us back here, so Sukadeva Goswami has now said, I have answered you. I've answered you. And the word was Manishinam. The intelligent man inquires about his duty. The intelligent man inquires about what is right. This, the word duty means, you know, it's dharma. And I always go back to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's very brilliant definition of dharma. That dharma, he says, means our eternal nature. So it's very interesting. Eternal nature means what you're made of and what you're made for. So unless you understand what you're made of and what you're made for, you can't understand what is your duty and what you should be doing. What you should be doing depends on your constitution. And then, of course, he explains that our constitution is that we're part and parcel of God, and therefore we're meant for His service. So that's our ultimate duty, and therefore dharma are those activities which uncover our eternal nature. And adharma, or irreligion, or is what covers our eternal nature. And this is the Krishna conscious standard of ethics. One day I would like to have many, from reading the Bhagavatam, many articles I would like to write. I'd like to write a short article on what is ethics according to Krishna consciousness. So he explains that this is therefore the duty of intelligent man. He's answered him that the duty is, what is right for him is to uncover his eternal relationship with Krishna. And the process for doing that is chanting and hearing. And therefore, the ultimate duty is to get an attraction for Krishna. Because by getting an attraction for Krishna, then we will chant and hear. When you have an attraction for someone, then you spontaneously talk about them. The purpose of human life is to get that attraction for Krishna. And that's our duty. And therefore, our duty is to chant, hear, worship, and remember Him. This is what we're doing. This is why we have sadhana. Because by sadhana, which means the conscious utilization of the senses in the service of Krishna for the purpose of getting that attraction. Therefore, it's important to have sadhana. It's important to get this taste for chanting and hearing. Because this is the process of this is the duty of an intelligent man. This is the purpose of human life. The duty of a man is about to die is the duty of everyone. So he's explained this very, very carefully, even though he's explained indirect ways to do it. Because worshipping the Virat Rupa, the whole purpose of seeing the material universe in relationship with Krishna is for the impersonalist and the materialist to get an attraction for Krishna. And the purpose of meditating on the Super Soul is to focus the consciousness, purify the intelligence, so that you can detach yourself from the material world. And ultimately, after you do that, with the right aspiration, attach yourself to Krishna. So this was the duty. And that's what an intelligent person is. So now, what he's going to do now is talk about the demigods and discuss how it's an inferior type of worship, because it's also a type of worship, so you have to deal with it. Otherwise, in the name of duty, one may worship the demigods, as many people do in India. So this is very intelligent preaching, that you have to tell a person what to do, but to keep him focused, you have to also help him distinguish what not to do. Otherwise, he may include those activities in his understanding of what is duty. So therefore, the teacher, the spiritual master, he must explain what to do and what not to do. So he's explaining here about the demigods. And as you can see, it's very, very attractive because we got these modes of nature within our hearts. So therefore, the modes are attractive. There's impulses in us that are attracted to wealth, to women, to progeny, to so many things in the material world. And you can have, Prabhupada said, a considerable influence over this desire by this worship of the demigods. Wow, attractive. So he's listing this and different modes. Different desires can be filled by people in by different modes of worship. You can fulfill all these desires. Now, he's pointing them out specifically in contrast, because this is the less intelligent person, and this theme has been gone through, but if you study the Bhagavatam until this time, you should understand that this is not really an intelligent aspiration. The material world is not an intelligent aspiration. But we fulfill our desires in the material world to keep our mind in a regular, to keep our mind peaceful for the higher endeavor. Therefore, there's vanashram. There's a way to fulfill your desires in a way that it won't increase your desire for sense gratification, but it will make you peaceful for focusing the mind on Krishna. So, he's describing this. And Prabhupada talks in the purport that the less intelligent, they aspire for benefits through these demigods or through material science. But in other words, all such persons who aspire after gaining some or all of the material objects of enjoyment, or the gross materialistic persons, are in a whole less intelligent, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7:20. It is said there that those, who are bereft of good sense, or those whose intelligence is withdrawn by the deluding energy of Maya, kamastastai hitagyana, padyante yudevata, I think it's that verse. Hitagyana, the intelligence, or there's another verse, upamedasa. So this is less intelligent because it doesn't really solve your problems, and Prabhupada discusses that in the purport. You know, these different maneuvers in the material world don't really solve the real problem. It's like someone is in the prison house and he moves from, you know, one cell to another cell and becomes very excited because that cell is a little bit more comfortable. The problem of restriction is still there. Or someone who has a terrible disease. You know, and I see in the, I went to visit a boy in the hospital. He was in the van, the shelter van rolled off the hill and they almost all got killed. And one boy broke his spine. And they had to get a helicopter out there and it was a 10-hour operation. He recovered miraculously, but I went to visit him in the hospital and I see every bed has a television. And that's all they do all day. You can imagine if someone became excited because he's dying of some terminal disease and they got a color TV or something. It doesn't really deal with the real issue, the real, just like yesterday I was in pain the whole day. I had some physical problem, you know. So, you know, there's not much, until you get rid of that, there's not much happiness. So an intelligent person understands this, that he has to solve the problems of birth, death, disease, and old age. And as long as he's confined to these, he hasn't really made progress. So Prabhupada discusses that in the purport. And how this human form of life, it has a speciality that it has this intelligence that can exert will to change his situation to solve these problems. So the intelligent person, this rare human form of life, and then Prabhupada discusses, but Maharaj Prickett has been addressed by the Goswami as the Manishi, or the man of highly developed mind, because at the time of death he left all material enjoyment and completely surrendered unto the lotus feet of the Lord by hearing his messages from the right source, Sukadeva Goswami. But aspirations for material enjoyment by endeavoring persons are condemned. Such aspirations are something like intoxication of the degraded human society. Intelligent persons should try to avoid these aspirations and seek instead the permanent life by returning home back to Godhead. So he's going to continue explaining these. Dharmatma uttama shlokam tantu tanvan pitrin yajay rakshakama punyajanam ojas kamo marudyanam. One should worship Lord Vishnu or his devotee for spiritual advancement and knowledge and for protection of heredity and advancement of dynasty. One should worship the various demigods. So the Uttama Shlokam, the personality of God, or persons attached to the personality of Godhead, for Dharma Artha, for Dharma, religion. We should worship for that. And for Tantu, for offspring, and Tanva, for their protection, we should worship the Pitrin, the residents of Pitriloka. Yajate, must worship. And Punya Janam, pious persons, Uja Kama, who desire strength and desire protection, Marutana, they should worship the demigods. So it's just going on in the same thing. Raja Kamo Manundevam Niritam Tvabicharan Yajate. Kama kamo yajet soman akama purusham param. So one who desires domination over a kingdom or an empire should worship the manus. One who desires victory over an enemy should worship the demons. And one who desires sense gratification should worship the moon. But one who desires nothing of material enjoyment should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'm going to read this purport. For a liberated person, all the enjoyments listed above are considered to be absolutely useless. Only those who are conditioned by the material modes of external energy are captivated by different types of material enjoyment. In other words, the transcendentalist has no material desires to be fulfilled, where the materialist has all types of desires to be fulfilled. The Lord has proclaimed that the materialist desire material enjoyment and thus seek the favor of the demigods, as above mentioned, are not in control of their senses and so give themselves to nonsense. One should therefore not worship any sort of material enjoyment, but sensible enough should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The leaders of nonsensical persons are still more nonsensical because they preach openly and foolishly that one could worship any form of demigod and get the same result. So it's not the same result. So this is the param padam, the purusham param, worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay. So here in this verse, it describes how to attain the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the purusham param, the Supreme Person. And there's a specific process to do that. And it's very, very much different from the process mentioned before of worshiping demigods with particular material aspirations. Therefore, the Bhagavatam at the very beginning says, Dharma Kaitava Projita, Dharma Projita Kaitavota Paramo Namatsaranam Satam. That there's Namatsar, those are not envious. The material world is specifically a place that one comes to fulfill his material desires. So, those who are near Matsara, who have no envy, envy means competition. Those who are not trying to get ahead in the material world, those who don't have material consciousness. Material consciousness means I want a fruit of consciousness. I want to take for myself. I'm the enjoyer and I want to accrue something for myself. That consciousness gives us a material body. Prabhupada defined, that's karma. Karma is the consciousness one has that gets a body. The consciousness that puts you in the body is this fruit of consciousness. So those who are not in that conception of life, that I am the enjoyer and therefore I should accrue things for myself, but don't have kama, personal desire for sense gratification. Those people, they should worship Krishna. In other words, those are the people that worship Krishna, because the worship of Krishna means that there's no personal desire. You desire his pleasure, and that's called pure devotional service. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma jnabhitam. If you have no personal desire, then those persons, akama purusham param, they worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When you come to that point, that I'm not interested in competing in this material world for enjoyment and control, when you give that up, when you're akama, and you want to be Krishna's servant,
not to accrue things for yourself, but to work for his pleasure, then you should worship Krishna. So this is what's described here. And only by that worship will you get the supreme destination. And Prabhupada gives the example, if you want to go to Bombay and you buy a ticket for Baroda, you stop at Baroda. So this is the ticket to get to the supreme destination, the Param Purusham, to the supreme person. This is the destination. One has to be pure. One has to develop his consciousness to give Krishna pleasure. That's bhakti. And this is what one gets from the spiritual master. This is the bhakti lata bij. The bhakti lata bij is the inspiration and understanding and attraction within your heart for giving Krishna pleasure. And this is what we got from Prabhupada. We didn't have that before. We had the other aspirations. This was our conception, that we should compete, we should get more money, more wealth, more sex, more this, more that, better this, better that. We had no idea. Then the guru comes and the bhakti lata bij comes. And then by the process of chanting and hearing, that aspiration and that faith and that trust in the sublimity of serving Krishna increases. And this akama develops, no personal desire, but love, that your desire is the pleasure of Krishna. So this is pure devotional service. And only by this process can you get to the Supreme Person. And for this purpose, you should worship Krishna, not the demigods. If this becomes your objective, if you actually want to become free from material desire, in other words, if you want bhakti, because bhakti means complete freedom from material desire. Bhakti is actually the only process that's really accomplished. Because even if you want to merge, it's still a personal desire for enjoyment, a subtle sense of control that I am God. So only by worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, if you want bhakti. So he's actually come to the point again of bhakti. And one who worships the Supreme, if you have no desire, and that's what you want. If it's not this desire, that desire, but you want no desire, you want no personal desire, you actually want bhakti, you want devotion, you want love, not lust. When that's actually in the heart, then you should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's what bhakti means. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma jnanavritam. Anukulyena Krishna nu shilanam bhakti upitam. Bhakti means Krishna nu shilanam. Shilana means your activities. Anu, they follow Krishna. That's love. When you love someone, your activities, your mind, your body, and words follow the desire of the object of your love. So if you love Guru or you love Krishna, then your words are spoken to satisfy them. Your actions are spoken to satisfy them, and your thought process works to satisfy them. That's Krishna Anushilanam. And the opposite consciousness is that your mind, body, and words act to satisfy your own senses. What I desire is how I should act for my desire, rather than acting for the desire of the Supreme. So this is akama. And one should therefore, for reducing his material desires, you should worship Krishna. And this is the danger of worshiping Krishna. Because sometimes he fulfills your desires. And it's a very, very wonderful process, actually. We all go through that. We worship Krishna, and he reduces our desires. He reduces our material aspirations. So this was the conclusion. If you don't want aspirations in the material world, you worship Krishna. Akama sarva kamo va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. A person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of all material desire, without any material desire, or desiring liberation, must,
By all means, worship the Supreme Whole, the personality of Godhead. So this is very interesting, because the same words are there, purusham param, yajeta purusham param. You must worship. If you're what? Udara di. If your udara means broad, your di means intelligence. If you have very, very broad intelligence, not narrow intelligence, that you can see the, you know, broad intelligence means that you can see the greater perspective. That overview enables you to see the specific thing. For example, I give an example, if you have diarrhea and, you know, there's a big feast and you only see like 1 o'clock when you begin the feast and 2 o'clock when you end the feast, like a child, it's narrow intelligence, but one with broader intelligence, he'll look at the whole day, how he'll suffer, or the whole week. And therefore, he judges his activities on a broader perspective. He can see. Well, Brahmana. Brahmana means broad-minded. He can see not just in terms of the temporary body, but he can see in the terms of the self in many, many lifetimes. And therefore, a person with broader intelligence acts for his ultimate welfare and his ultimate benefit, and not just his temporary pleasure. So a person who is udaradi, who has broader intelligence, whether he has any of these desires, he worships Krishna. Okay, you're sarvakama. What can you do? You have all desires. Or you have moksha kama. You desire liberation. You desire to merge. Or you have no desires. In either case, if you're intelligent, you'll worship Krishna and not the demigod. Even if you want liberation, this is udaradi. So you see, whatever happens here, you see in the Bhagavatam, it discussed the Bharat Rupa, and the conclusion was what? The Bharat Rupa is a manifestation of Krishna, worship Krishna. Discussed the Supersoul. The Supersoul is Krishna, is in everyone's heart. So therefore we should chant here and worship Krishna. And now here are the demigods. So one is more intelligent, he should worship Krishna. Why? Because the ultimate beneficiary of all activities is Krishna anyway. And in fact, in any process of self-realization, you cannot become successful without some bhakti. Because ultimately, even for Jnana Yoga, which is, you know, an intellectual process, the inspiration and the realizations have to come by some form of mercy, which doesn't happen unless you worship. So in every process, there's bhakti. And without bhakti, you cannot be successful Astanga Yoga, you cannot be successful Jnana Yoga, you cannot be successful Karma Yoga, because ultimately it must come from Krishna, so why not worship Him directly? So Prabhupada discusses this, that one who desires to merge in the supreme impersonal Brahmajyoti must also worship the Lord by bhakti yoga. The Brahmajyoti is not separate from the Lord, as the glowing sun ray is not independent of the sun disk. He can award liberation to the impersonals by absorbing such aspirates into the Brahmajyoti. So it's coming from Krishna. So bhakti yoga is especially stressed here as the means of all perfection. And then Prabhupada gives the overview. In the previous chapter, it's been stated that bhakti yoga is both the ultimate goal of karma and jnana yoga. And in the same way, in this chapter, it is declared that bhakti yoga is the ultimate goal of different varieties of worship of the different demigods. It's the ultimate goal because Krishna will fulfill your desires ultimately. And ultimately, the only desire that will fulfill the heart is the desire to satisfy Krishna, because that's what we are by constitution. So the ultimate goal of every process of self-realization is Krishna. Both for the benefits you want in that process and for the ultimate essence of your desire to become satisfied and happy. Ultimately, it's Krishna. Bhakti yoga, thus being the supreme means of self-realization, is recommended here. Everyone must seriously take up the method of bhakti yoga, even though one aspires to material enjoyment or liberation from material bondage. Ultimately, bhakti yoga will satisfy you in every way. Every way. Even material in a way, because it'll purify you and bring you to the mode of goodness you can actually enjoy.
So there's a quote by Jiva Goswami, very important. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained this akama, this desirelessness, as bhajaniya paramapurusha sukha matra svasukhatvam in his Sandarbha. This means that one should feel happy only by experiencing the happiness of the Supreme Lord. This is bhakti. That our happiness must come from the pleasure of Krishna. When Krishna is happy, that's our happiness, and that's love. And when that flows through the heart, that actually satisfies the heart. Lust never satisfies the heart. That type of happiness, that's the mercy of Krishna, because that's his own pleasure potency. Within your soul, when you develop the desire to give Krishna pleasure to a sufficient extent, Krishna will facilitate your desire by giving his own potency, Ladini Shakti, the pleasure potency, which means that sense of your eternal relationship with Krishna. And what is that sense? That sense is that I love Krishna and I want to please him. I am Krishna's mother, or I have a motherly feeling for Krishna, and I want him to be my child, to be satisfied. That love flows through the heart, and that's completely selfless. And it gives one satisfaction and happiness. So that's desirelessness. And Prabhupada in the Purport also discusses very, very nicely how this particular sense of consciousness, it's there all over in terms of family, community, country, humanity. It's a partial manifestation of the original feeling in which a pure living entity feels happiness by the happiness of the Supreme Lord. There's a sense of it. And you can see in the modern society where people just go for sense gratification and the community is destroyed and the family is destroyed and people are left alone. Although there's more sex life, there's more intoxication, there's more computer games, there's more sports, there's more things to titillate their senses, we see that they're not feeling happiness. They're not feeling happiness because there's no sense of love and affection and doing for others. So Prabhupada is explaining this in the purport. Such superb feelings were exhibited by the damsels of Rajabhumi for the happiness of the Lord. The gopis loved the Lord without any return, and this is the perfect exhibition of the akama spirit. Kama spirit, or the desire for one's own satisfaction, is fully exhibited in the material world, where the spirit of akama is fully exhibited in the spiritual world. It's explained in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, even the gopis, their mood is, even though there's external, you know, it's, they have sidelong glances and embracing, and that their mood, but let by my actions, let Krishna be happy. That spirit is fully there in the spiritual world. It's akama. Even Radharani and Chandravali. That Radharani competes with Chandravali. She wants to get to Krishna. But only because she has a greater capacity to satisfy Krishna's senses. And if her chief competitor was more expert than her, then she would become her servant. And Chandravali competes with Radharani only because that competition increases the affection of Krishna, not for her personal sense. Again, Prabhupada, again, Udaradi. One cannot obtain any result from the demigods without getting sanction from the Supreme Lord. Therefore, a person with a broader outlook can see that the ultimate authority is the Lord, even for material benefits. Under the circumstances, one with a broader outlook, even with the desire for material enjoyment or liberation, should worship the Lord directly. And everyone, whether akama or sakama or mokshakama, should worship the Lord with great expedience. This implies that bhakti yoga can perfectly administer without any measure of karma. And yet, as the unmixed sun ray is very forceful and therefore called tibra, similarly, unmixed bhakti yoga of hearing chanting may be performed by one and all regardless of inner motive. So it says you should worship Krishna, but how? Tibrena bhakti yoga. Tibrena means the sun ray, which is very, very forceful. Very, very intense. We should focus the mind on Krishna. Not even if we're desiring other things, still our bhakti should be fixed. It should be very, very powerful.
Etavan eva yajitam iha nishreyas yodaya bhagavat achalo bhavo yad bhagavata sangita.
All the different kinds of worshippers of multi-demigods. In other words, this is going to explain why he said everyone should worship Krishna, regardless of what their desire is. He says, all different kinds of worshippers of demigods can attain the highest perfectional benediction, which is spontaneous attraction, unflinchingly fixed upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, only by the association of the pure devotees of the Lord. So nishreyasa means the highest benediction. So the highest benediction is mentioned here. Bhagavat achalo bhava. That you have unflinching bhava. Spontaneous attraction to Bhagavati. So Etavan, anybody, you can achieve this highest perfection. This is the highest perfection. As Prabhupada said, the perfected state of the living entity is called the devotee. So this is the highest state. This is the pure state of the living entity. And this is the greatest pleasure that one could have. So all different kinds of worshippers, they can achieve the Purusham Param, the Supreme Person, the highest benediction, the Nishrayasya, the ultimate good, by this unflinching bhava, the Supreme Lord. And how does that come by, that unflinching bhava? Bhagavat Sangita. And that comes by the association of devotees. So it's so wonderful, you know, whatever process is discussed, it describes it. The ultimate sanction thought is Krishna. We should ultimately worship Krishna. And the highest goal we can get is the service of Krishna. And now how does that come? It comes by the association of devotees. This is also discussed previously in the Bhagavatam with Sutta Goswami. It says that one should constantly worship Krishna. Therefore, I forgot what it said, it's constantly, day and night, worship Krishna. So the question, you should chant, hear, and worship Krishna constantly. Sutta Goswami told this to the sages of Namasharanya. So then the question would become, how do you get that attraction? And if this is the process, it always comes back to the process is constant chanting and hearing. How do you get that? What if you don't have an attraction? Then how will you spend your day chanting and hearing about Krishna? So the verse was given, what is that verse? Anyway, I'm forgetting the verse, but basically what it says is that the ruti, if you want the ruti, an attraction for Krishna, you have to serve the great souls. You have to serve the great devotees. So this is always the process. If you want that unflinching to be fixed upon the Supreme Lord and have that ruti for chanting and hearing, then you have to serve the devotees. If you don't have that attraction, you have to serve the devotees. And by serving the devotees, great service is done and one gets unflinching attraction to Krishna. And then the process of chanting and hearing. Also, Prabhupada discusses in the purport the necessity for sadhu sangha, because you will not aim for the highest benediction unless you get the association of the devotees and understand, Prabhupada said, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Then how will you know what the highest benediction is? And unless you set your aim at the highest benediction, you won't. Why will you worship Krishna? Unless you have some understanding, you'll be stuck at worshiping the demigods. So bhakti requires that the intelligence is fixed on the proper destination, and practices are done in that mode. And when practices are done in that mode, then one will, one will have to have some proper understanding. Therefore, Prabhupada says, the Bhagavad Gita affirms
says the most authentic Vedic literature is accepted by the great Indian acharyas like Shankara, Ramanuja, Madhva, Vishnu, Nimbark, Chaitanya, and studied by important is the Bhagavad Gita, in which the worship of the demigods and the respective residential planets are mentioned. And there it mentions that it mentions that worships of demigods only achieve their destination. And we hear about all planets from the Bhagavad Gita. We hear that in Brahmaloka is just temporary. So the worshippers of the demigod have one more facility than the unbelievers due to their being convinced of the Vedic version, by which they can get information of the benefit of serving the Supreme Lord and the association of devotees. In other words, unless you hear about the proper thing, then you won't. You'll worship the demigods. So the conclusion is, therefore, unless the gross materialist or worshiper of the temporary demigods comes in contact with a transcendentalist like the pure devotee, their attempts are simply a waste of time. Only a pure devotee can show the right way of progressive life. Otherwise, both the materialist's way of life without information of God and the life engaged in... Okay. They are nicely explained in Bhagavad Gita, but the Bhagavad Gita can only be understood in the association of pure devotees only. So unless you have the right guidance and understanding, then you won't seek the highest benediction. Okay, last verse. Transcendental knowledge in relation with the Supreme Lord Hari is knowledge resulting in the complete suspension of the waves and whirlpools of the material modes. Such knowledge is self-satisfying due to its being freed from material attachment. And being transcendental, it is approved by authorities. Who could fail to be attracted? Anyway, we'll finish this verse tomorrow.